See, I would love to hear that in like a 99% Invisible podcast. Yeah, or like
I love that
Freakonomics
podcast.
Or something like that.
Love that sure. podcast too.
Hidden Brain too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Those are all podcasts I listen to.
Man, we should get whiskey sometime.
Yeah.
And listen to podcasts. And listen to podcasts. Go for a run. Do you go for a run? Do you jog though? Do you run?
So I used to play field hockey and I couldn't, I like was done with running because I ran so much. But we could sit there with headphones on and just not talk and just like.
Wow.
Our goal on this podcast is to know Jesus better and with the power of his spirit, do better. So together we can be a little better. Welcome to the A Little Better podcast. Today we're going to be tackling a pretty challenging topic, the topic of depression. But we're joined by, well, hopefully we would like to say an expert in the field, Dr. Mark Oldham. Aside from being a doctor at the U of R, University of Rochester, you happen to actually attend our Brighton campus as well. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
I'm also joined by our pastor, Drew.
What expert? I'm an expert in something, am I?
The cheerleading?
No.
I don't know. But this is obviously a really challenging topic. So there'll be some descriptions down at the bottom. If at any point in this conversation you're struggling with something, we want to be a resource for you to draw closer to God, but for you to find the help that you need. So be looking out into the show notes for that. But obviously we're talking about depression. And Mark, could you give us a little bit of context for your experience dealing in the clinical field of depression? Give us a little background on that.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. No, I appreciate it. Well, thank you for having me. And I should say at the outset, I am a psychiatrist. I work clinically. I do research as well. But anything I say here is not, you know, medical advice or recommendations. But nevertheless, yeah, just putting this in context, thinking about depression, how we might approach this clinically. The word depression can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. So it's kind of elastic. The word is elastic in that way. So depression describes, at kind of its simplest sense, it describes an emotion of dysphoria, not feeling good. You feel kind of dark. But that's just an emotion. People can feel depressed when they get bad news. People can feel depressed for a variety of things that happen in their life. But that can fluctuate. So that's just an emotion. When we talk about depression in a clinical sense, some people will use the phrase clinical depression. In psychiatry or medicine, we would call it, let's say, major depressive disorder. We're talking about a condition where the depression just doesn't let up. So there's a certain number of symptoms that a person has to have, and then the severity of the depression has to be to the point that it, one, causes really significant distress, and almost always some degree of impairment in their ability to do certain roles. So just in being a parent or going to work or doing other things that they need to do, they're just unable to do it because of the state. So yeah, I mean, when we say depression, I want to be very clear that not all depression, the emotion, represents something that's clinically, you know, meaningful and something that needs treatment in that way.
I even talked a little bit about that in my message, is this we use this one word to talk about so many different conditions, really. Some is just seasonal. Some is just, you know, living in Rochester, we deal with a seasonal depression, the gloominess. But then there's this chronic clinical depression. And there's even gamuts, I'm assuming, in that world as well. And so it's almost frustrating to use this one word to cover this wide variety of people's experiences.
Yep, absolutely.
We kind of talk about this in terms of, or at least under the umbrella of mental health. And I'd love for both of you, from each of your, I'll say unique vantage points, from being in a medical doctor, in treating patients, et cetera, and also from your perspective being in the church, maybe that's your expertise, is I'd love to know from your vantage points, what you see when it comes to mental health. We are almost describing it as that we're in a mental health crisis. What do you see when that's talked about?
Go for it. Yeah. You brought the message. So go for it.
I mean, from my vantage point, you know, I see all kinds of mental struggles. Right. I deal more with, you know, rightfully so, the more seasonal depression, the more like negative dark thoughts, because I am not a doctor and I don't know how to treat clinical depression. I think God can play a role in every kind, but I do think there are times when someone needs to go see a physician, a doctor, mm-hmm. and yeah. treat neurological and psychiatric things. So from my perspective, I'm dealing more with the people who are struggling with dark thoughts that won't seem to go away. I think that's something that almost everyone deals with at certain levels, certain periods of time. And so I'm trying to help people mentally focus on God's goodness, his faithfulness, the spiritual side, how your mental thoughts impact, you know, your body, your soul. And so my lens is trying to get people to focus back on scripture, the truths of scripture, to help renew their mind and their way of thinking, that they, no matter the circumstance, because of the hope Christ gives us, mm-hmm. there can be hope despite the hopelessness. There can be light despite the darkness.
No, I hear that full, loud and clear. So my experience with depression and mental health clinically, so I work in the hospital. Most of my work is as a consultant in the hospital. So the depression that I see is, you know, one, it's depression that, you know, same idea. It's persisting and it's clinically significant. But kind of the biggest question that I run into in my line of work is, what's the explanation for it? Mm-hmm. So working in a hospital, there are a lot of medications that can cause depression. And it's nothing to do with what the person is experiencing. It's not necessarily that the person's in a really difficult place, you know, in their life or stressful wise, but there are a number of medications that can cause depression. Mm-hmm. There are medical conditions like hypothyroidism and B12 deficiency and so forth that can cause depression. And if you don't treat the underlying cause, you can try to talk yourself out of it as long as you want, but the depression's still going to be there because there is something kind of causing it underneath. And so a number of substance use patterns can lead to depression, either when they're using or when they've withdrawn from the substance. So, you know, really understanding what the cause or causes might be, that's kind of what my role often is. And then obviously once you identify the cause or causes, then you really kind of come up with a treatment plan that addresses those to the best of your ability.
Do you see like an underlying thread with that? There are a commonality across the board that you see, some would attribute like social media to being that. Now that's a very small, like mm-hmm. you just mentioned, a whole litany of things from medication to circumstances. Do you see an underlying thread of a rise of depression or depressive states, not just clinically, but more of that emotion?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. So, I mean, if we were to rewind the clock to, I don't know, 50 years ago, 70 years ago, the idea of depression wasn't as much an emotional thing. When the word depression was originally used, it was actually used in the context of neurology as a kind of psychophysiological depression. The person wasn't getting up, they weren't tending to kind of daily activities, they weren't leaving the bedroom, they weren't leaving the house. They were depressed in a sense that their system was depressed. It's really been only the last number of decades that we have really emotionalized the experience of depression. So no longer is it this, a medical term might be anhedonia, which is the lack of pleasure or the reduction of pleasure. So you do things that you'd ordinarily enjoy doing, like going out with friends or, you know, playing a specific sport or being involved in a hobby. And, you know, usually that should bring us some sort of joy and some happiness. And that's appropriate. And it should. God gives us those things to enjoy. But, you know, historically, depression was this, you just couldn't find that. Nowadays, I feel like it is moving more into this emotional state where it's like, I just feel dark or depressed or dysphoric, that kind of thing. And so I think we've kind of broadened our idea of depression, but certainly, I mean, social media, being drawn to things like TikTok and all the stuff that's happening. I mean, there are, I'm not an expert on the epidemiology of depression and so forth in the community, but you know, I've definitely read a number of reports that suggest that this is a huge issue. And one of the stats I know in the message had to do with the fact that suicide is extremely common. It's like, you know, anywhere between, depending on where you look, the 9th or 11th leading cause of death. I mean, that's huge. That's
very
huge.
Significant.
Every 12 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, it's tragic. It's absolutely tragic.
So if that's kind of like the base, just kind of give our listeners a baseline of what we're talking about. I'd love to kind of jump to your message, and I'd love to give them the like 60-second recap of your message, and maybe some of the things that, I mean, you get 25 minutes to try and cram such a nuanced, complex issue. And what you kind of left, or you might have wanted to include it in it.
Yeah. So my message, you know, was just giving a generic, definition for depression, very similar, persistent, dark, negative thoughts and emotional state. And really, I was kind of tracking with how we see some of that through David's life, through the prophet Elijah. Like, this isn't a brand new problem to our culture. It's an ancient problem that we just have more language around. And so the big thing I wanted to do in this message was bring hope to the darkness, bring light. And so, but just by helping people remember truths, like, you're not alone. God's with you. Our church is with you. And then God has overcome our issues. And I love looking at David's story, right? You know, he's at this dark state. How long, Lord, must I suffer? How long? But then there's this David's mind being removed, this process in verse 5 where he says, I will rejoice in your salvation. That the depression might not go away here on earth, but we have the truth of Christ that he has overcome the darkness, and one day it will go away. And we see how David's mind was slowly changing and seeing the hope despite his circumstances and his thought life.
Yeah. If I could build on that, you know, one of the things we talk about in kind of mental health spaces about depression, there's something called the cognitive triad. So we have negative thoughts about the self, negative thoughts about the world, and negative thoughts about the future. And each one of those kind of leads to lies about where I am, who I am, and kind of what help is available. So if I have negative thoughts about myself, I might feel worthless. And God tells us we are not worthless.
That's right.
I mean, we are made in God's image, and that's precious. If we have negative thoughts about the world, we can have a sense that, you know, there is just either a meaninglessness or a nihilism about things, and yet God has made the world, and he is infused it with his glory. So we know that the world, you know, still retains God's glory and his presence. And then, you know, negative thoughts about the future, I mean, that can lead to a sense of hopelessness. And that's not true. We do not mourn like someone who has no hope. We have hope for the future, and we can rest firmly in that. And we have God's Spirit as a guide. We have the church, the body of Christ, as support. There's so many different resources available, but ultimately the thoughts, think about mind field, right? This is a mental experience. This is something that I experience, but the world can only kind of infer what I'm actually going through. Yep. And so these thoughts are lying about where things are. They are stealing the present moment, and they end up destroying things. And we know who does that. That's the devil. I mean, these are thoughts that are dangerous. And so this is something that we need to combat for people's good so that they find recovery and help.
Yeah, I think the enemy is so good in spots like these, negative dark thoughts, to just whisper, you know, hey, isolation, you are worthless. There's something wrong with you. And what the sad reality is so many people buy into those lies. Our culture often buys into those lies. And the more we can do to have conversations like this, make awareness, and also speak truth into people's head spaces, I think is super beneficial.
Absolutely.
I find you're in a really interesting position because you're a juxtaposition or an intersection, is probably a better way of putting it, between faith and science, which pre-Enlightenment was more integrated, and now we've kind of sadly separated them. But I almost feel like you're somewhat of an embodiment of faith and science at the same time. And I'm curious from your standpoint, as you bring almost both to bear in your field, how do we approach depression through the lens of faith and science? I think as you talked about the cognitive triad, that was actually really helpful. I'd love for you to kind of talk a little bit more on that. Where does the medical side and the faith side intersect?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So I'm just from when you're saying kind of that intersection, I like William Lane Craig, and he has a you know, a ministry called Reasonable Faith. And so he brings, you know, reason, and, you know, he's brilliant, but he brings science and reason and faith and brings them together. And there is no contradiction, to be clear. There is no contradiction between the two. People create artifactual kind of contradictions, but it's not true. I mean, if you really map it out. So, I mean, I would say, number one, kind of where does this land for me clinically? I start with the presupposition that the person in front of me is made in God's image, and that they're worth it. They might be going through horrendous experiences. So when people see me, they're probably in one of the lowest points in their life because they're medically sick enough, surgically sick enough to be in the hospital, but also kind of mentally, cognitively, emotionally sick enough to have a psychiatrist saying hi to you. Mm. So I end up seeing people in some really dark places, and one of the things that I do research on is called delirium. And delirium is a state of acute confusion that happens from a variety of different medical conditions, and medications can cause it. And delirium is a chameleon. It can present with anything, including depression. And so, you know, it can be very easy in that moment. You know, it's very dehumanizing to not really have access to your personality, to have access to, you know, just clear thinking. And so I think that ends up being a foundational premise that I start with in engaging people. In terms of clinical management, you know, for those who do have a strong faith, you know, I very often, not always, but very often will ask people about their faith background, if it's something that's meaningful to them and something they want to incorporate in treatment, then I think we as clinicians should be willing to do that. And so incorporating that and just, letting that be a part of the equation for healing. But then when it comes to how do you manage it, I mean, we do have some pretty standard roadmaps for clinical management. I mean, there's psychotherapy, which is kind of talking to somebody, you know, who has expertise in a certain type of therapy. We have different medications. You can use both of them. You can use one or the other. I mean, to be honest, once it gets to moderate to severe depression, it's really hard to do the kind of talk therapy that we'd want to do. Yeah. So the person, you know, and I mean, this might be a comment to someone listening who says, oh yeah, you know, depression, that's just a cop-out. You know, you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps.
Sure.
Which, by the way, if you want to do a free body diagram in physics about how that works, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. You cannot pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It is physically impossible. Like to have you try it. So in any event, So, I mean, it's not a cop-out in the sense that, you know, when a person is really going through the depths of depression, you know, they don't really have access to the kinds of spontaneity and the kind of motivation to do things, to clean up, to take care of themselves, hygiene, reaching out to people. They isolate. So in that sense, I mean, I'm really glad that we do have these other resources that we can offer to help people kind of get through that so that then as they're improving, maybe they can make better use of something like biblical counseling or therapy or another form of treatment that is really going to engage the mind, and they have the ability to do that.
I have a question for you, Mark, on that, because anytime we have these conversations, I usually get a couple emails about someone who is frustrated that we would even mention with depression medication, right? They would say something along the lines of like, why are we not just allowing God to heal that person? And, you know, I don't know why there is this tension with our mental state that it feels different that for people than like our physical bodies and going to a doctor for, you know, medicine or shots. What would you say to that person who feels that tension around this subject?
That is a great question. By the way, I have on my bookshelf a book called Psychoheresy, which tells me all the reasons why I'm doing the wrong thing by being in the mental health field. So I remind myself of that daily.
So you're saying you wouldn't recommend
that? No, exactly.
We will not have that in the show notes.
That's an excellent question. I think it's a brilliant question. It's important to address. I appreciate it. So, I mean, essentially what I would say is, you know, there are many different types of depression. We already talked about the fact that there are many causes of depression. Mm-hmm. It could be, again, it could be a medication, it could be a medical condition, it could be bipolar disorder. So bipolar disorder, you tend to have both of these poles. You can be depressed or manic or have mixed features.
How much could it be like circumstantial? You're just you struggle to actually cope or have the tools to cope with the situation at hand.
So, okay. So yeah, so I'm getting there.
Okay. Sorry.
Yes. No, you're on the right track. So there are some types of depression that, or psychotic depression. So a person has schizophrenia, but they also are depressed. Right. So in all of these different circumstances, you know, many of them are not going to get better by just talking about it. Like, right. I mean, I would invite anybody to talk to someone who has hypothyroidism and therapize them and pray them enough into kind of normal, appropriate mood. We call that euthymia. I mean, it doesn't happen. Right. So we know that there's this interplay. Mm. So there is, it's muddy. It's murky. I get it. It's not obvious at times. But to your point, to the question you asked about, well, what about circumstances? So there are, if the depression happens and there's no obvious kind of clinical thing, there's no stressor that we might attribute it to, mm-hmm. then in clinical settings, we might be a little bit more suspicious that it is something like bipolar depression or mm. that it might be a medical cause of the depression. But when we think about kind of the stresses that happen that can lead us to depression, you're absolutely right. So we do have depression sometimes. A depressive episode can happen as a result of really bad things happening in life. And in fact, there was a study done back in the day, one of the more interesting studies, the Kenneth Kendler did a study looking at monozygotic twins who were what we'd say rigorously discordant for depression, which is to say that they did these life stories of these individuals. One never had depression. One clearly had depression. And they would do these life stories. And the twin with depression, in every instance, they were able to map it onto a very clear difference in life experience that likely contributed to it.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. There is this interaction between what we bring to the picture, what our own vulnerabilities are, how resilient we are, and then our experiences.
Right.
So there is a way in which the two interact. And as a clinician, you know, I'm mindful that all things are possible, that they could be having interactions, and I want to make sure that we're giving people the greatest chance for success. And again, I mean, I'm delighted that we have things to offer that can help.
So to basically kind of wrap or to answer your question, it's really there's this wide scope that to some degree it's brain chemistry that needs some level of medical intervention, as well as perhaps a whole gamut of other tools, whether that might be many would seek meditation or things like that, exercise to address. So for the people that are like, why are we talking about medication? It was like, well, the breadth of conditions.
Yep.
And thankfully, even now, David didn't have medication. Like,
right,
he might have helped him a little bit back in the day.
And I think when we talk about medication, people just assume we just shut off the spiritual side,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But you can go and get medicine and still be praying over mm-hmm. someone or still be preaching the gospel to that person. Both of those things are going to bring healing mm-hmm. and help in that journey.
I'd love to get a little bit more I'd love to talk about how can we address some of our depression, and I know we're using that very, very broadly, and then I would love to get to how do we help people. I remember going to see a therapist, and he suggested that I had an underactive hypothalamus, mm-hmm. and he suggested things like exercise or even taking fish oil supplements would be a way to help address some of that, because I wouldn't say I was depressed, but there is simple ways to help lift my energy and lift my even perspective on what I was going through. I'd love to know, even from both of you, and you did mention a lot of those things from like repairing your thoughts, praying your thoughts, arresting your thoughts. What are some helpful things for our listeners to, if you're actually dealing with, not necessarily the clinical side of things, we could get there, some of the things that as we are dealing with the hardship of life that we find ourselves in a persistent mood of despair or feelings of despair that, as you put it earlier, mm-hmm. what we once found enjoyable mm-hmm. is no longer enjoyable. What do we do? Maybe it's not as easy as doing exercise and taking fish oil tablets, but are there things like that, practical things?
I mean, for me, exercise is a big one mm-hmm. for my mental health. Yeah. Getting up in the morning, going to play basketball, playing football. There's just something to be said, at least for my mental health. I feel so much more invigorated. I feel like I have a clear mind. I take, this might sound crazy, but like cold baths. And it focuses yeah. my head, and it like centralizes me. Mm-hmm. So exercise, I think, is a big one. I think hobbies you enjoy. Mm-hmm. Again, I know there are some parts of depression that like you can no longer enjoy those hobbies. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do think there is a state of depression that, man, just going and being around the people you love, mm-hmm. Having fun, going on a vacation, are healthy habits that can maybe help you from getting to that darker side.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, insofar as you have recourse to be able to do these things, dive in, yes. Headlong. So I agree. Exercise is important. Eating healthfully is important. We eat very unhealthfully here in the U.S. That's probably not a news flash. but yeah, I mean, like eating, you know, fruits and vegetables and yeah, that kind of
so
stuff.
So a Twinkie won't help.
Probably not.
I would like to say a Twinkie has helped my state of mind every once in a while.
Not a whole box. So yeah, I mean, doing that, obviously, yeah, being a part of community. I mean, I'll just say, I mean, doing a plug for community groups, getting involved in a community group, being involved, I mean, just kind of listening to worship music, diving into things that you enjoy, getting out in nature. My goodness, like just getting outdoors and not being in, you know, four walls. I think is really important as well. Yeah, just, yeah, so many things. And I'll also say, kind of, we talked about this a moment ago, getting off of social media.
Yes.
I mean, like being in the world, interacting with people in front of you is so critical. God made us to be in community. Like he is a community in himself. So like, I think he's trying to tell us something that we need to be in community. So I think all of those things are essential to finding meaning, to health overall.
I'm curious of your thoughts if you've read much on Viktor Frankl, the psychologist from the early 1900s who was in a concentration camp, and he came up with logotherapy. So there's three things with logotherapy. Now I'm unstudiously summarizing these three things. So
did you go to Wikipedia and find this?
I didn't. No.
Okay. Just wanted to.
But
Google. Yeah. Okay. All right.
That too.
Yeah. So one would be a project to focus on. Second one is a redemptive or optimistic view of suffering, which is very powerful when you think of he's trying to help those who are in a concentration camp. And then one is a community of people who love you. I don't know if you have any comments on those two things.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, so, I mean, his story is compelling. I mean, and really, I mean, it's my understanding that he came to that because, you know, while in a concentration camp, he saw some people break down. And he saw some people kind of survive. And if not thrive, they were resilient. Mm. And he wanted to get to the bottom of why are some people resilient and why are some people not able to find meaning and kind of persevere. So so it's a powerful thing. And he wrote a book called Man's Search for Meaning. I think that's the book that he's best known for. So my understanding of logotherapy in clinical settings, I know there's a guy, Dr. Breitbart, who does psycho-oncology in New York City, and he has kind of operationalized some of logotherapy for medical settings for cancer and kind of really meaning-centered psychotherapy. I know that's something that is done in oncology care at times. I haven't seen it done as much outside of that, but I think the points are valid that we really need to find meaning and that meaning itself can drive a lot of kind of like not just like hedonic pleasure, but eudaimonic kind of pleasure, a sense of deeper, richer sense of meaning. Mm. I don't know that in isolation without some of the kind of challenging some of the negative thoughts and some of the activation that we do with behavioral activation therapy or CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, or interpersonal therapy or psychodynamic psychotherapy. There are other types of therapy, ACT, that those are also engaging different aspects of kind of thinking patterns, challenging them, and getting people to a point where they're able to challenge the behavioral patterns as well in pursuit of recovery. But yeah, I think finding meaning is important, and it's mostly, to my understanding, currently done in cancer care.
Got it.
What's interesting, as I've seen, like, so my wife's an RN and she worked in a cancer hospital for, you know, 10 years. And one thing that I've seen shift just in the medical field, and this is not even necessarily on depression, but the mind in general, is how the medical field seems to be, and I'm curious to see if you see this shifting towards more of a holistic approach to healing, you know, not just treating a symptom in the body or a source of a problem, but using the body and the mind and the soul, like this holistic approach that your mind actually plays a whole huge role in healing. And when people are going through, you know, hard medical things, it affects the mind.
Yeah.
And I've seen the shift in the medical industry, at least in my wife's field, of like how people, doctors are going after the mind even more now.
Yeah. So one quick point. So in scripture, the word soul is very often used as a synonym or kind of an analogy for the mind. So when you hear the soul, the mind, thoughts, emotions, kind of the will, all that kind of wraps into the soul. So a few things. One, I do think we are seeing a trend that direction the last couple of decades. Basically, Surgeon Generals had this statement, you know, no health without mental health. And it was really a huge kind of seminal kind of paper, white paper, about the importance of mental health in pursuing health as a whole. So I think that and a number of public awareness campaigns and advocacy campaigns have really brought the mental health side of things to the forefront, and it needs to be. Mm. So I have seen that. I mean, I'll say for University of Rochester, you know, it's somewhere, University of Rochester Medical Center is somewhere that the so-called biopsychosocial model kind of was birthed. Engel and Romano were two of the early proponents, specifically Engel published about it. And it's really getting the biological, the psychological, and the social aspects of the person. And each of these is a relevant element to how we engage with the person holistically. Mm. And each one of them needs to be incorporated in how we think about the person in context and how we help them. So I do think we're going that direction, and I don't want to be cynical, but unfortunately the history of medicine has seen this cycle a lot. So we kind of get there
and then stop.
And like, you know, Osler, you know, like back in the day, Osler, like he had his ideas about this, and then we kind of forgot it. And we remember it and we forget it. So we are, I think, going the right direction now, but I don't know how far we can project that into the future.
Yeah, sure.
I hope it stays though.
Mm. So mental health has obviously been, at least in the cultural zeitgeist, it's become a buzzword for many of, and the, whether you want to call me skeptical or cynical, that's up to you. But I think we can end up, or I think some people can tend to use mental health or a decline in mental health as almost a scapegoat. Help at least me and my perception of it. Where do we balance that line of this is something that is negative in my mental health and this is just something that's actually really hard, that's actually good for my mental health that I need to learn how to cope with, and the pain with purpose is actually a good thing?
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's an excellent question. That's a really tough one. So I do think this is more philosophical and theological, really, in kind of how do we engage with that question. So I do think over time that we have, you know, historically in the mental health field, we would talk about kind of things being in the subconscious. Now, not that we have to kind of buy into the full model of the subconscious and so forth. There are some things that Freud had that were really bizarre and not accurate and not helpful. Mm-hmm. But there was, I think, a tremendous insight into recognizing that there's more than meets the eye.
Right.
And that there are things beneath the surface that we really need to engage with. And I think very often nowadays, there is the kind of general sense in the zeitgeist, is a good word, I like it, is, you know, we want to push things out of awareness. And if I don't see it, it doesn't bother me. And so I do think we want to kind of have above the surface everything kind of looking good. I think a lot of this is, again, fueled by things like social media, where it's just my image and I want what people see to be good, but what's underneath you never get to see, because I get to log off and I'm not going to post those pictures.
Yeah.
I'm going to curate things.
Yep.
And I think even just our engagement with, you know, first person, you know, digital worlds, we're able to create our own kind of persona. Mm-hmm. And in that way, I think it gets kind of dangerous. So we're kind of creating this plastic existence, and underneath it, we're not really dealing with what I think are a lot of the hurts and things that we're just, where meaning is lost, right? So, so I think from a Christian worldview, you know, we lose a lot of meaning. We lose a lot of sense of what's right and what's wrong. We lose morality. We lose a sense of God's sovereignty. And we lose sight of that. Everything becomes relative.
That's right.
And when things become relative,
yikes,
there's a lot of danger if there's no North Star. Yeah. I agree with that. And I think it's been kind of a broad cultural shift.
Right.
And so from a kind of a Christian worldview, we would have a different diagnosis about that.
Yeah. We've probably all, if not friends, family members that have dealt really sadly with debilitating depression. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to move as we kind of slowly kind of end this podcast. I'd love to take a minute to, how do we best help others? It's really, really hard to watch a family member retreat. And as we even talked about earlier, it becomes irrational, where the rational things, the truths that we believe of who God is very hard to grasp onto, especially when we're in a guilt and shame cycle in depression. How can we help those that are in that really dark, despairing place?
I would start with compassion. I think that's where God starts. We talked about that in the message, how God looks upon you. He doesn't say, get it together. He doesn't say, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, even though that's impossible. We made that clear.
We've established that.
He is a God of compassion. Mm-hmm. And I think being present with people, sometimes telling people the truth they don't want to hear or they don't believe, mm-hmm. preaching the gospel to them. Mm-hmm. We had a cool moment in pre-preach as I was kind of just getting ready for this message. And someone said, you know, what I've experienced this. And what do you do when you can't do the things you're telling me to do? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where community comes in, a community of compassion, where they love you as you are, but they love you enough to say, we're not going to let you stay here. We're going to walk with you. We're going to give you compassion. We're going to be empathetic. We're going to preach the gospel to you. I think that's a huge piece to it.
I completely agree. Starting with compassion that's the foundation. Mm. That was Christ's, you know, that's what he led with. Yep. And that was kind of just suffused his interactions with others. But I think, you know, moving beyond that too, I think when we engage with people in our lives who have depression, there is a balance or a tension that I think we need to engage. So on the one hand, we meet them where they are. We reach down. And very often that might mean we have to reach out proactively because they're retreating and they don't want us to get to them. Because again, shame is this idea of who I am. Guilt is what I've done. And so both of those kind of keep people isolated and kind of in a prison emotionally, relationally, kind of locked away from people. So we go to them. Just like Christ came to us, we go to them.
That's right.
And so that's number one. Now, when we go to them, we meet them where they are. We can't just stay where they are because that's not going to help.
No.
Right? Like we have to instill a realistic sense of hope. So we have one foot squarely planted with where they are. We're meeting them. We're listening to them. We're not giving them pat answers like, oh, they're there. Everything will be okay. Because they're not even going to hear that. That's just going to go right over their head because they know it's not true.
So is that just like sitting with them, listening to them?
Yeah, listening to them, acknowledging that it's been tough, acknowledging that things don't feel right.
Right.
You know, acknowledging that. I mean, there's a sense of, so the psalm that we covering in this message is like a lament.
Yeah.
Like there is a lament, but lament can be itself transformative when we acknowledge and we turn to God and we, you know, say we trust in his unfailing love and his faithfulness. So the one side we meet with them, but the other side is we have to have a foot outside of that world and in reality, right? So we have to be able to say, you know what? I know you're feeling that way right now. I hear you loud and clear, but it's not going to be like that forever.
Yeah.
Like, there is hope. There are options. This is not where you were 2 months ago. I know you. This isn't you, because depression represents a stark discontinuity from someone's life and existence, right? Mm. So they were a certain way before it. Now they're in this kind of dark place that we're going to call clinical depression, kind of the general term for clinically significant depression. That's not who they are. It's not mm-hmm. who they usually are. So we need to have a realistic sense of hope for that person as we engage them.
As we wrap up, how would you encourage the person? I have someone very specific in my mind right now mm-hmm. whose family member, it's just very hard to get through. And they've been trying a really long time. Mm-hmm. How would you encourage them?
I mean, I would start with prayer. I mean, start, end with prayer, and prayer all throughout it. Mm. You know, there are many dark places of the soul, and God knows where they are. Mm. God cares about them. God cares about them more than we care yeah. about them, and we have to trust that. We have to believe that firmly. I mean, I believe that, and so we pray for them, and we don't give up. And we don't give up because depression can very often fluctuate, right? So there might be a time where it's darker than others, and maybe there might just be that moment of clarity. There might be that breaking in the clouds where they have a moment of insight, and being consistent and showing them that we're not giving up also really counts for something, right? So somebody in that mental state might say, oh yeah, they're just coming. I mean, this is the way they might be thinking, like, oh yeah, they're just coming around because they want something, or yeah, but they're not really in it for me. They're just, you know, mm-hmm. they just feel like it's a nicety that I'm doing. But if you stay in there and continue and mm-hmm. persist and persevere, I think you demonstrate to them the love of Christ. I mean, Christ is the hound of heaven, right? He mm. does not give up on us. Yeah. He didn't give up on me. He doesn't give up on people. He is right. always coming after us, and his love is pursuing us. And I think we need to be the hands and feet of that love, reaching out to people consistently.
Yeah. I mean, I would echo all that. I think of David's words, you know, trusting in God and his process. Mm. God doesn't work on our timing. Right. And a lot of things take longer than we wish they would. And I think surrounding it in prayer, being present, walking in compassion, and do what you can to, you know, fight that tension of bringing hope into their life and be consistent. I think consistency is big. Mm-hmm. I think someone who's the people I have dealt with depression in my family, it felt like they were constantly waiting for me to bail. They were waiting for me to give up. It was like someone was whispering in their head, just give it time. Mm-hmm. They're going to leave. Mm-hmm. And
that's the lie.
That is the lie. Yep. The lie. And that consistency, I'm not going anywhere. We're with you to the end. Mm-hmm. And just begging God to intervene. I think, as Mark said, are all amazing things you can do.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Mm. It's been really insightful. Thanks for your knowledge. You too, Drew. Totally. And I just want you to know, as you watch, hopefully if you've not dealt with depression, as you probably know someone that has, that you understand and feel the sense of compassion that we can receive from Jesus, and he changes our heart and our mind, our eyes to see people for the image of God bearers that they are, that we can, as Drew just said there, stick with them to the end, that we can be consistent in prayer. And if you're honestly struggling with depression, if you're really in a dark spot, whether you can receive these words or not, I want you to know that you are loved, yes. you are cherished, you are valued. Whether you know either three of us or not, there is someone in your life that does. And if you can't grasp onto that, please know that God loves you. He sees you. He is yes. with you even right now. I hope to see you next week as we continue in our series, Mindfield.